from the WEEI studios. 93.7 WEEI FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. And Odyssey Sports Station.
The valuation is $4.1 billion, around there, roughly speaking. So,
Paul, I'm sorry, it's not for sale.
4.1.
You got that kind of scratch?
All right, love. I don't got that kind of scratch, but look, he said love, not money. Elon Musk be like, hey, I got $10 billion.
Wait, what did he say?
$10 billion.
Elon Musk offered you $10 billion.
Oh, I don't think he knows if a basketball is blown up or stuffed.
$20 billion.
Come on, it's not for sale.
$30 billion.
Not for sale. Not for sale.
$50 billion.
Not for sale.
Not before the game.
All right.
We gotta win another ring.
All right, there y'all have it, man. Hey.
That was the Truth Lounge. That's what that was. Paul Pierce with Rachel Nichols and Wick. Yeah, it's not for sale, Paul. Didn't you hear him? It's not for sale. Turns out it is. Chris Mannix tweeted out last hour. Keep an eye on a casino resort magnate pursuing Celtics ownership. Grosbeck doesn't own TD Garden, now one of the older in the NBA. A new majority owner may want to build a new arena, and when it comes to gambling, Massachusetts is open for business. Joining us here on WEEI is Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated. Chris, first of all, thanks for joining us. And second of all, what's the tie-in here with a casino resort magnate and getting in with the Celtics?
Well, I think for starters, it's very difficult, given these valuations, to find a lot of individuals that can afford to buy these teams. It's part of the reason why we saw kind of that tiered buying system in Minnesota, where Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez put up a chunk of money at a time to get to where they needed to be, and we saw kind of how that has become a catastrophe in Minnesota. So it's not like there are a lot of high net worth individuals that are interested in buying a team and have the resource to buy a team. The interest from a potential casino magnate, and let's use Wynn and its ownership group as an example, since they are already entrenched in Boston, is that you can build around the team. Like, you're buying the team, but you're also buying everything that goes into owning a team in a specific area. So if, say, hypothetically, the Wynn bought majority interest in the Celtics in much the same way that the Adelson family bought controlling interest in the Dallas Mavericks, you could build out an arena in Everett, which they've been looking to do. I mean, we know they've been interested in an arena or stadium for the Revolution. You know, they've been eyeballing stuff like this for a while. If you bought the Celtics, you could build an arena down there and make them the centerpiece of you know, an attraction in that area. And again, this is not new. The Adelsons are currently in the process of doing that. If there is a team, and I know it's Vegas, but if there is a team in Las Vegas, it will almost certainly play in an arena resort of some sort that is built for them for the long term. So this is kind of a trend line in the NBA, with these valuations being so big that it sort of makes a casino partner a little bit more appealing.
Chris, walking this back just a few steps, because this was shocking news to us this morning or this afternoon whenever it broke. Did you get a sense that this was a possibility for Wick Grosbeck and his family? And do you have any sense of how long this news has been in the works? How long they've been planning it?
No, honestly, I did not expect this kind of announcement to come, because Wick Grosbeck has, you know, he's a relatively young guy, and he's always struck me as someone that thoroughly enjoys being an NBA owner. He's not Mark Cuban, but he's at majority of the games, available for reporters to talk to on and off the record. He seems to really enjoy all of this. So I am curious to know some of the reasons, and the language in that statement was was interesting. You know, for, you know, citing estate planning and family matters. I'm paraphrasing a little bit there, but that didn't. I've asked about this and I haven't quite gotten clarification on why that language specifically was used. So it was, the announcement was shocking. I guess, you know, in the aftermath, though, as I've talked to enough people and kind of ownership sources around the NBA, it shouldn't be all that surprising, I guess, if you just look at the simple math of it all. I mean, the Celtics are probably never going to be more valuable. You've got a TV deal that's about to begin in a year or so, and everybody kind of knows what those numbers are going to be, right? We know it's going to be, you know, a 10 or 11-year deal, $7 billion per year. The Celtics still have some stability with their regional sports network, which is something that scares a lot of owners out there, the future of those local broadcast rights. And they're an NBA champion with a roster that is well-positioned to be, you know, championship level for several years to come. Selling now not only would probably net you the biggest return, but it also saves you from what are going to be monster luxury tax bills that you have to pay over the next couple of years. I was asking some capologists recently about, you know, kind of the money the Celtics are going to be invested in after this Derek White deal. And we're talking, you know, with tax penalties, a payroll that costs them about $450, $500 million per year. That's an NBA record for the amount that the Celtics are going to have to pay. And they're still valuable regardless of that, but they're a lot less valuable when those tax penalties, which the NBA has you know, purposefully inserted in these last two collective bargaining agreements, when they really start to kick in. So financially, selling your team right now, or before the end of the year, or before the end of next season, makes a lot of fiscal sense for Wick Grousebeck if he's looking to maximize his investment.
We're talking with Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated. I was going to just follow up on that, Chris. What you just said is that, yeah, it's a legacy organization. They just won a championship, but it's an extremely expensive roster, full of tax penalties and all of that. If Wick Grousebeck was planning on doing this, isn't his behavior over the last, since the season ended even, with all these re-signings and everything, Derek White, they didn't even put the ink on that contract before this whole thing got announced. How do you sort of square that if they're trying to bring back a team, maybe so the next owner can have it run himself? Like, why would you do all those things if you're trying to position it for a sale?
Well, I think, the money is obviously significant, but anyone that wants to buy in on a team, it's more appealing if they know it's going to be really good. Like, you know, putting aside the market size, which is obviously a factor in buying a team, like, you're much more eager to buy the Celtics than you are the Portland Trailblazers, because you know what the Celtics are going to be, at least for the next 4 or 5 years, if you continue to invest in them. They're kind of turnkey in that way, whereas some of these other organizations, you know, it's going to take a while, and they might wind up losing money while you're trying to kind of turn things around. And one thing that Wick Grousebeck has told Brad Stevens and members of that front office over the last couple of years is that if we have a player on this team that is helping us win a championship, don't worry about the money. I will spend the money to keep that guy in place. And to me, the announcement of the Derek White signing, which everybody knew for the last couple of weeks was going to happen, This was as no-brainer for the Celtics and Derek White as it is giving Jason Tatum his max extension, which I expect to come in the days and weeks ahead. This, to me, was evidence of that, proof of that, that Derek White, who was invaluable to the Celtics' success, Wick Grousebeck saw it and was willing to reward it.
Chris, I want to explore the RSN portion of it that you referenced earlier. We were reading a story out of Dallas from when Mark Cuban sold the team. He referenced the RSNs, right? They were Diamond Sports, I think, which went bankrupt. You mentioned that NBC Sports Boston is on better footing. They're not as concerned as other teams. But why is that such a scary proposition for owners, and will this lead to more owners selling?
Well, it's less money, right? And people can kind of scoff at the revenue that these RSNs bring in when compared to, you know, the national TV money that is going to come in. But, and look, I know we're talking about huge dollar sums, but half that goes to the players, then you distribute it. And so the pie gets chopped up, you know, a lot before each owner gets his taste. So that RSN money, even though, you know, some of that is shared as well, that RSN money is money they like. It's money they can count on. And right now, for the Celtics, you know, that money's pretty good. I think they own, what, 20% of NBC Sports Boston as well. So, like, that money is good for them, and they've got years left on that contract. But 3, 4, 5 years from now, nobody can say what the RSN business is going to look like. The Bally Diamond stuff, it terrified people how quickly they kind of went bankrupt and all the issues they caused throughout several of the major sports. So the fact that that money might, that revenue stream might be significantly lessened, you know, several years from now, that's a factor in all this. And it goes back to what I said at the beginning. Like, if Whit Grousebeck knew that at some point he was going to sell, be it this year, 3 years, 5 years, if he wasn't looking to make this team a family legacy that he passes on, you know, to his children, well, this is probably the perfect time to do it. You know, this is probably the moment that you are going to get maximum value for your asset.
I want to ask you about some of this language that was in the announcement that the Celtics made, I'm guessing in conjunction with the Boston Basketball Partners LLC, just at the very end, because I know this is something fans keep repeating a lot, that the managing board of the ownership group expects to sell the majority interest this year or next, with the balance closing in 2028, but that Whit Grousebeck will remain the governor of the team until the second closing in 2028. Do you have any idea how much power, how much involvement he'll still have in the Celtics once, you know, the first part of that sale goes through and he has this governor title? But what does that possibly entail when somebody else has a majority stake in the team?
I'll be honest, I don't see that happening. Look, Mark Cuban still has a percentage ownership, 27% ownership of the Dallas Mavericks. And when that sale originally went through just, what, 6, 7 months ago, Mark Cuban talked about how he would still be running day-to-day operations. Well, he's not anymore. Like, Nico Harrison is reporting to Patrick Dumont, who is the governor of that team now. Mark is obviously still heavily involved, but he is not the final say on decisions in that organization. And I think that whenever it is that Whit Grousebeck sells this team or sells his controlling interest in this team, whoever buys it is going to have their own plan. They're going to want their own governor in place well before, I think, 2028. Look, there was so much in that statement in just two paragraphs. That second paragraph, the way I interpreted it, and I can tell you it's a way that multiple people inside the NBA interpreted it, is that they are going to try to attempt something Minnesota just did, which is sort of a tiered sale process where you put up a chunk of money now, maybe a chunk of money 2 years from now, and the sale closes in 2028. Now, I don't know that specifically to be true, but that's how it read. And that's how some people I talked to in the NBA ultimately read it as well. I promise you, if that's the case, it is a non-starter with the league. The Minnesota Timberwolves, how they went through this was an embarrassment, where Glenn Taylor sold a chunk of the team, A-Rod came in, Mark Lowry came in, and now they go to these games and they can't even look at each other because they're involved in mediation because Glenn Taylor decided he didn't want to sell the team anymore. The NBA, in the aftermath of that mess, and Adam Silver's gone on record about this, and I've talked to enough people that back it up, you either sell the team or you don't, right? Like, you have a sale date where your interest gets passed on to somebody else, or you don't. There is going to be no more tiered sales system where you buy a team in chunks, because that Minnesota situation, which has played out very publicly and in a very ugly way over the last, you know, 6, 7 months, that is not something the NBA is looking to get involved in again.
All right, Mannix, we spent the better part of today talking and discussing who the next possible owner could be. Are there any names out there, anybody that you sort of know behind the scenes who've been really itching to buy an NBA team but who's not really out there and hasn't really made that public? Is there any breadcrumbs you can give us there?
John Henry.
Like, yeah. John Henry or somebody like that?
Yeah, all I can say is I have not heard the Fenway Sports Group mentioned yet as a potential owner. But I do believe this process is set to move relatively quickly. I mean, you saw in that statement, like, they want to sell this team by the end of 2024 or early 2025. In part, I'm sure, for some of the reasons I articulated. Like, you don't want to be on the hook for that tax bill when it comes at the end of next season, and certainly not the one after that. But I don't know specifically who would be in the mix, just that I've had enough people kind of metaphorically tap me on the shoulder and say, watch out for some of these casino groups that could come in and try to make a splash. And look, that's incredibly complicated. Like, we mentioned the win, and they as you guys know, like, and people in Boston know, like, when the win brought their casino into Massachusetts, it came with a lot of strings, right? Like, they're the only casino or only gambling entity that can operate in the eastern Massachusetts area. Like, you can have a license there, you can have a license out in Springfield, you can operate in certain sections. So right now, really, the win would have a stranglehold on if they wanted to jump in and make an offer. But the win, a part owner of the win is Tilman Fertitta, who is the majority owner of the Houston Rockets. How would that work? I've also heard some things about maybe, you know, the owners of the win wanting to sell and get out, and maybe somebody else can come in. So it's incredibly complicated how all that would work. But that's just what I was kind of told in the hours after that announcement. Keep an eye on some of this casino money, you know, coming in and trying to make a splash.
Okay. He is Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated. Excellent, excellent work. Thank you for joining us here, Chris. You can check out all of his work on Twitter as well, at SI Chris Mannix. Chris, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you down the line.
You got it, guys.
All right, Chris Mannix, as all our guests, joining us here on WEEI. So a lot of interesting stuff. No John Henry. Steve Wynn has all kinds of personal things and lawsuits, I thought, going on too. So, like, there's that whole complication. But
there's other members in the family who could be involved.
True, and that's what happened with the Adelson estate. And so, yeah, my immediate reaction was that's not something Wynn wants to do, never mind the Fertitta relationship. I knew Tilman Fertitta owned the Rockets. I didn't realize he was, made money off Wynn. I knew he was in casinos, but I didn't know that. And so, and the number's never going to be higher.
I think Wynn's stuff is either dismissed.
That's
or
all
settled.
Gone?
I think it's
okay.
Gone. I don't know if anything's pending right now.
I thought I had heard similar to him that there's talk that they're looking to get out of that casino. That doesn't mean the casino won't be there. Someone wouldn't buy it. They couldn't put in an arena, but I had heard similar things with that. But they're going to get, reading between the lines of what Mannix is saying, that's the team that could get first crack. It all aligns, or that's the potential ownership group that could get first crack there. And they might try to do a tiered system of a sale, like what Minnesota
did. The NBA would not like.
That was a disaster. So, he said that.
So
I almost
embarrassing.
Fell over when he brought that up.
So we'll see what they're doing.
That could get really ugly and very distracting. Mm.
But let's follow what he's the only person I've seen with any, like, kind of, I don't want to call it concrete, but any idea of who could come in and buy the team.
Well, he said that was his interpretation of the second paragraph of the statement that the Celtics put out, and that was in line with what other people inside the NBA who he talked
to. Well, and again,
interpreted
it. If you're selling the team, you're selling the whole team, which makes sense. You're not going to keep a bunch of minority investors on and sell the biggest stake in the team. Like, that's not going to happen. You want a new valuation and new rounds of financing, I would imagine. And so, okay, interesting. Great stuff from Chris Mannix. If you missed any of it, the beginning of it, it's on the Odyssey app. Check it out there. It'll be there in full. Also, you can go to our YouTube page, WEEI. Subscribe there. Check out the Jones and Mego interviews. We talked to Andrew Raycraft earlier today on the Bees moves, which have gone to the back burner. Arcan with all the details here in trending. We'll come back and we'll get to Meg's planning.